Welcome to the Community Mennonite Church Podcast. Today we have a sermon by Pastor Jennifer Davis Sensenig.
Macedonia, concluding that God had called us to preach the gospel to them. Local Mennonite leader Wendy Malvaez offered a workshop at the recent Holy and Beloved gathering for women in ministry of all kinds. She and her husband Juan Carlos serve Manantial de Vida, an Hispanic congregation here in Harrisonburg. A few years ago, Wendy had a dream. She says, "In my dream, I was in a large church with disengaged people. I stood up and went to the pulpit. I began proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ. When it was over, I asked the Holy Spirit where I was, and I was told, Guadalajara, Spain." Wendy shared this dream with church members Francisco and Juanita Machado. Just as Silas, Timothy, and Luke accepted Paul's vision as God's direction for the newly formed mission team, Francisco and Juanita embraced Wendy's dream as God's message for them. Francisco and his family moved to Harrisonburg shortly after I did. They came from Honduras and gained asylum because of death threats in their home country provoked by Francisco's tireless work for justice and peace as a Mennonite activist. I came because the church called me here. Although Francisco and Juanita have been active in ministry locally, both studying and serving, now God is calling them through a dream to post-Christian Spain. God still calls people today through dreams and visions, even if we westernized cultures need additional confirmations in order to pay attention. Our story from Acts begins with Paul's vision of a man from Macedonia begging, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." And in response, Paul and Silas, Timothy, and Luke, the others with him, arrange for passage across the Aegean Sea, come to port in Philippi, meet this group of women, and a new church community is born. This vision of a cry for help from the book of Acts is really quite a contrast to the story of help and healing from the Gospel of John. The man near the Jerusalem temple, lying beside the pool, doesn't ask for help, let alone beg. He is perhaps the least willing and least grateful recipient of divine healing in any of the gospel stories. Both of these passages speak, I think, to the collective conscience of Mennonites because we are known as Christians who respond to the cry for help. Most Mennonite congregations have a strong identity of service. We see ourselves as helpers. We Mennonites provide humanitarian aid in the wake of war, rebuild after natural disasters, welcome refugees, and care for persons with mental illness. This is not just a random list, but describes major efforts of North American Mennonites in the 20th century. We are more comfortable with the language of service than we are with leadership. Our helping identity is expressed in jobs, in volunteer work, in commitments to our families and church responsibilities. We ritualize our ethic of service and helping through foot washing. Personally, I became acquainted with Anabaptist Christians through Mennonite voluntary service. So my own desire to serve and help others was matched and augmented by my new Christian friends, the Mennonites, who had institutionalized service for young adults. But just as the concept of leadership is debated, so too now the language of helping. If, like mine, your family was influenced by American feminism in the 1970s at the pop culture level, then you're familiar with this song from the album Free to Be You and Me. Did anybody recognize it? All right. The album is a classic. I highly recommend it. The Helping song, lyrics by Shel Silverstein, is just funny, and it's much less political than most of the music and sketches on the children's album. But it still has kind of an edge. Some kind of help is the kind of help we all can do without. Obviously, we don't want help that ends up hurting us in the long term. Nor do we want help to do what we can do for ourselves. In fact, this kind of help can frustrate and humiliate. At the Leading for the Common Good conference, Speaker Peter Block suggested that when I help you, I'm essentially colonizing you. Block prefers work styles that are mutual and organized by circles rather than separating people into top-down service provider models. Though most of us were Mennonites, when Block said, when I help you, I'm essentially colonizing you, the audience did not gasp. No one walked out of the room in protest. So I had to examine my own discomfort. Now, some of my internal distress was alleviated by kind of nuancing Block's provocative comment. Perhaps he means that when one helps another, we are at risk of colonization, exploitation, and abuse of power. Some kind of help is the kind of help we all can do without. A church in Indianapolis has reoriented their urban ministry based on this kind of insight. Though they were known in the community for their clothing ministry, their food pantry, and an after-school youth program with as many as 250 children participating, Broadway United Methodist Church has ended these helping programs. Pastor Mather puts it bluntly, stop helping people. Rather than the church seeing neighbors as people to be pitied and helped, they want to see people as children of God, as gifted persons, a community in which many things are indeed going well. Discontinuing their charities and programs, this congregation has hired a roving listener to be out in the neighborhood, build relationships, and listen to people and network. There are some interesting results, though they're a little more difficult to quantify than statistics from their programs. For example, the individual backyard gardeners in the neighborhood didn't see anything special about their skill, but when they got connected to each other, they realized that they had a gift to share with other neighbors. Now, conversations are convened at Broadway United Methodist Church around shared interests using an asset-based community development approach. And each of the last 6 years, teenagers in the community have been hired to engage in this kind of listening work in their community. Is this a better alternative to traditional helping? Parker Palmer is a Quaker author who's writing about teaching, vocation, leadership, and even fundraising has influenced me a lot. But I read something by him on helping or not helping that made me uncomfortable again. In his critique of traditional helping models, he was advocating companionship rather than advice giving. Palmer writes, here's the deal. The human soul doesn't want to be advised or fixed or saved. It simply wants to be witnessed, to be seen, heard, and companioned exactly as it is. When we make that kind of deep bow to the soul of a suffering person, our respect reinforces the soul's healing resources, the only resources that can help the sufferer make it through. But I humbly disagree, even with Parker Palmer, because of three questions to which I would respond yes. Do we human beings need help? Yes. Are there things which we cannot do for ourselves? Yes. Do we need divine help? Yes. I do not believe that all the resources for our healing and hope are simply within us. Ontologically, I need help. I need salvation, and I'm not able to do that for myself. I need God. Brothers and sisters, maybe that's embarrassing, but it's one of the humbling truths of our faith. And let me be clear, it's not just that I need other people, a social circle of support and witness to my soul, though I need that. Christians are like everyone else on the planet because we need help. We need saving. Though our need may be hidden deep down, we know it at some level. We've been there. We've come to the end of ourselves. Please don't get me wrong. The by now well-worn yet relevant critiques of help that fosters dependence, that sees people in terms of social problems rather than in terms of their gifts and strengths, are still very relevant for our churches and institutions, our mission agencies and social services. I need these reminders every day, lest my social location cloud my vision and I see someone else as less capable or less intelligent or less human than they truly are. But might the critique of helping dilute our own sense of need, our absolute need for God? That African-American spiritual comes to mind. It's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. Not my brother, not my sister, but it's me, O Lord. Not the stranger, not the neighbor, but it's me, O Lord, standing in the need of prayer. It's not a selfishness, but a humility before God that prompts that kind of singing. It's not ignoring the needs of others, but admitting our own predicament, captivity, and need. So these scriptures speak to us because we are known as those who respond to the cry for help. And in our vision process, we'll have to consider the critiques of traditional helping models as we examine some of our visions and dreams. These passages, I think, also speak to the depths of Anabaptist Christian identity because we've come through the waters of baptism. Just for a moment, pay attention to the water in these passages. Did you notice a suffering man lying beside a pool of water? A group of men setting sail across the Aegean Sea? A group of women praying not in a building, but outside by the river? A baptism of Lydia and her whole household. In each case, the water points to a source of help that is outside ourselves. Now, it's water. Water always points to our source in creation, the natural world and the elements that make life possible. Water points not only to creation, but to the Creator, the one who has created and called us into relationship through Jesus Christ, will help us. One dimension of our baptism is coming to the end of ourselves, recognizing our need for help, and beginning life in Christ. Baptism is our death and resurrection, an embodied ritual of divine help for suffering humanity. We don't baptize ourselves. We're lowered into the water, and we need help, divine help, to be raised up to new life. Lydia, apparently a Gentile single woman, and the other women gathered at the river, didn't ask Paul, Silas, Timothy, and Luke to help them. The man at the pool waiting for the waters to be stirred up did not ask Jesus for help. the man at the pool was discouraged and complaining about his situation. Yet the Lord came, grace came, and he was healed. God must sometimes work in spite of our resistance. But when the good news came to her, Lydia's heart was opened, and she was eager to receive it. With her household, Lydia is baptized. She shows hospitality to the mission workers and uses her skills to lead the new church community in Philippi. As Community Mennonite Church, we're in this vision process. We're seeking divine help for knowing God's desire for our church at this time and in our particular circumstances. What do I most desire for Community Mennonite Church? It's not that we would do more good. I'm not opposed to doing more good. And if we set out to do good and to help, then I think we'll need to be wise and consider the critiques of helping that are circulating among both academics and practitioners. What I desire for Community Mennonite Church is that we, like Lydia, have an open heart to the divine help that comes our way, that we take our own deep need seriously enough to receive what God is offering. There is ministry for which we are particularly gifted and to which we are especially called as a community. Perhaps my desire for our church is that we place our trust in a God who gives us dreams, who hears our cries for help and will intervene in whatever ways are possible, including the saving help in the form of a human being, even Jesus Christ.
Thank you for listening to the Community Mennonite Church podcast. Our theme music is a setting of John Wesley's text, Jesus, I Believe You're Near, composed by Matt Carlson. Jeremy Nafziger arranged it for strings. To learn more about our congregation or to plan a visit, please check out our website at cmcva.org.